Mark Stein's Last Call.
The biggest hit record ever to come out of Cameroon is by a songwriter saxophonist from Diwala, Manu Dibango. Soul Makossa. Number 35 on America's Billboard Hot 100 in 1973. And if you're thinking, wait a minute, this sounds way more familiar than some number 35 from 47 years ago, that's because it got quote-unquote sampled by many persons, including Rihanna in Don't Stop the Music, and Michael Jackson in Wanna Be Startin' Something, both of whom the Cameroonian sax maestro wound up taking to court. He certainly started something, but this week, the music stopped. Dead in Paris of the Chinese virus, at the age of 86, Manu Dibango. Dead in New York of the Chinese virus, at the age of 69, Mark Bloom. An actor rarely out of work this last half century. You'll know him from Crocodile Dundee with Paul Hogan, Blind Date with Bruce Willis and Kim Basinger, and Desperately Seeking Susan, where he aced an audition with Madonna.
I was in Los Angeles, my screen flew to New York on a red eye, and they said you're doing a screen test with this person named Madonna. And so I came and I went to the office and I sat there in this woman sat down next to me who I thought was a bike messenger. She had on these shorts and a bandana wrapped around her head and a ratty little script, you know, thing. And then Susan came out and said, oh, hi, Mark, you met Madonna. And I, oh, no, hi, how you doing? And she said, why don't you go into a room and rehearse? And so they locked us in a room to rehearse. And I'll never forget the first thing she said to me. I'm not going to tell you what it is, but I'll never forget. And then we came in and we did our screen test, and she misbehaved during the screen test. And we did the scene where we first meet in Danceteria, and I was just coming going, oh hi, you know, have you seen my wife? Yeah, I'm really looking for my wife. And during the whole scene, she kept sort of kissing and licking the side of my face. It seemed inappropriate, but fun. So we did this thing at the end of it, and afterwards Susan thanked Madonna, and she left, and Susan said, Madonna likes you. Alumuna, Siseau, Yasa Makosa. Amuna yeye, amuna yeye, koma, samakosa. Jenny Polanco started designing jewelry and haute couture in the Dominican Republic and sold them around the world to many glamorous figures, including Elizabeth Taylor.
Una zona de mucho dinero, sí. Entonces me llama y me dice, mire, aquí hay una cliente, la señora Elizabeth Taylor. Y yo, Elizabeth Taylor, yo no sé quién es. Me dice, ella es la actriz. Digo yo, ah, ella es Liz Taylor. Dice, sí, ella quiere que usted venga, que ella la quiere conocer. Y de verdad, se llevó unos 25 collares.
Liz Taylor bought out Jenny Polanco's store. This week, Senora Polanco bought it, dead of COVID-19 at the age of 61. Paul Goma was a Romanian dissident. He left Ceausescu's dictatorship for France only to find that Ceausescu's dictatorship wouldn't leave him. They kept trying to kill him.
Mais il y a des assassinats.
J'ai vu quelques fils et je me suis dit c'est une bombe. J'ai ouvert tout de suite. J'étais tout étonné que ça n'a pas explosé. Et puis je l'ai déposé dans la salle de bain et j'ai appelé la police.
In 1982, a Securitate agent was dispatched by Ceausescu to assassinate Paul Goma by going up to him at the Hotel Concord Lafayette to get a book autographed, in the course of which he slipped a poison pill into Goma's glass.
Dar un ziarist care este la aceeași masă răstoarnă paharul lui Goma în momentul în care vor să ciocnească. De fapt, ziaristul
seconds later, a clumsy Parisian knocked over the poison drink before Goma could sip it. Just another patron of the bar? Actually, no. A counterintelligence agent of France's DST, la Direction de la Surveillance du Territoire. Ceausescu's thwarted hit job gave a Romanian dissident almost another four decades of life. Until this week, dead of the Chinese virus at 84, Paul Goma. Mama say, mama sa, mama mako sa. Oh, mammy! That's not in the original. I just threw it in for poor Justin Trudeau. Still in quarantine. In grim times, it helps to have a pick-you-up. So how about a good old century-old chin-up song? While you've a Lucifer to light your fag, smile, boys, that's the style. That's Britannic English, boys. A fag is a cigarette and a Lucifer is a match. And that was Robert Mandel with the Robert Mandel Chorus and the Robert Mandel Orchestra, a name that takes me way back. Robert was a precocious lad born in New York and on the stage and on the airwaves by 8 years old. He played Tad Lincoln, Abe's youngest son, opposite Vincent Price as the ill-fated president on the radio, and he was on Broadway with Gertrude Lawrence in Lady in the Dark, all before he went to college. And then, at college, he tried conducting. And for a performance of On the Town, the composer himself, Leonard Bernstein, showed up and was impressed enough to tutor Robert for 3 years and then hire him as his assistant on the CBS series Omnibus. And then somewhere along the way, Robert Mandel decided to move to England and found a very lucrative niche as the conductor of family orchestral concerts up and down the land with full orchestra, full chorus, and the Mellocrino strings. One of my earliest big-time ventures in the UK was as the announcer of one of Mr. Mandel's concerts. I wasn't very good, and as I recall, he didn't much care for my intro, walking out on stage to bask in the applause and then turning sideways to flash me an enigmatic semi-glare I couldn't quite interpret. But I packed up my troubles in my metaphorical kit bag and smiled, 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 and the show went on. Here's Robert Mandel's first big West End show conducting a late entry in the Bricus and Newley catalogue at the Prince of Wales Theatre in 1972 with Anthony Newley and a take-home tune that's almost too catchy.
Seems to me you're either out or you're in. You lose or you win in these sad old glad old days. You're poor or you're rich. Who knows which is which anyway? We're living on time, we're having to borrow. No one knows if we will live to see tomorrow. Nevertheless, I guess we gotta confess, these are the good old bad old days.
We're living on time, we're having to borrow. No one knows if we will live to see tomorrow. There's a song for the age. Anthony Newley in the show. He wrote with Leslie Bricus, The Good Old Bad Old Days, conducted by Robert Mandel, dead of the Chinese coronavirus at the age of 90. While Robert Mandel was crossing the Atlantic from west to east, John Rowlands was crossing the Atlantic from east to west. Rowlands was born in Liverpool and played football for Mansfield Town, Torquay United, Crewe Alexandra, the San Jose Earthquakes, the Oakland Stompers, the Tulsa Roughnecks. Wait a minute. The Oakland Stompers, the Tulsa Roughnecks? What kind of names are those for footy clubs? Well, in the mid-70s, Rowlands was one of many British footballers tempted by the North American Soccer League, and one of the particular thrills of playing for a club that's brand new rather than a century old is that you've got a sporting chance of scoring their very first goal.
We moved over here in the early 70s with him when he retired from football in England, soccer. He came over, he played for the San Jose Earthquakes.
Davey Kemp, crossing ball in front. Rowlands and Charlie. Rowlands over here!
He played for the Seattle Sounders. He actually scored the first goal for the Seattle Sounders in the NASL.
Dead of the Chinese coronavirus at the age of 73, transatlantic footballer John Rowlands.
Don't you realise we're living to die? I'm happy to say in the good old bad old days. Taking the breaks and making mistakes in the good old bad old days.
Sometimes there is no magic moment, like the first goal for the Seattle Sounders. Sometimes you're just the guy who was there.
Today, the Marathon of Rome is just as much a legend as that of the soldier Philippides, who ran the 42 kilometers from Marathon to Athens and died after gasping out the news of victory.
Francesco Baroni was the hometown lad at the 1960 Olympics in Rome, a great long-distance runner. He knew those streets.
A host of men of all nations await the start under the raised hand of Marcus Aurelius. They're off, running as if it were a sprint and not a marathon. They have 42 kilometers and 195 meters to go, nearly 26 and a half miles.
But the 1960 marathon was one of those Olympic fairy tales that comes along every once in a while. The winner turned out to be Abebe Bikila of the Imperial Bodyguard in Haile Selassie's Ethiopia. He ran those Rome Autostrada barefoot and became the first black African Olympic gold medalist.
His name is on every lip. A magnificent effort. 2 hours, 15 minutes, 16.2 seconds. The Emperor will surely promote him for this.
And in the uproar and enthusiasm, no one paid much attention to the fellows coming in behind. But Francesco Peroni was there, a product of the Gruppo Sportivo Flam Oro, the sports group of the Italian police. He ran his best and he had a lifetime of memories. Dead of the Chinese coronavirus at the age of 89, long-distance runner Francesco Peroni.
Some people say they long for the old days, to take them way back when. I'd sooner stay right here with the gold days than go through that again.
Just a few weeks ago, we reported the death of a great Japanese funny man, Ken Shimura.
这是干嘛？
我小空空的嘛。
嗨。
ただいま。
嗨，お帰りなさい。疲れたでしょ。嗯。
すぐ畳むなよ、それをよ。
That's Ken Shimura playing opposite Kumiko Oke. He succumbed to the kiss of the coronavirus in March. In April, the virus returned to take his leading lady in that sketch. Miss Oke had an enviable Japanese media career, dramatic actress, television presenter, the host of the variety show Renso Game and the morning show Hanamaru Market, a voice of the Pokemon cartoons, and the star of a long-running ad for Family Fresh liquid soap.
Kirei na te, shite masu ne.
Shite masu ne.
Kono te dake homete kiyotta. Demo, kono kirei na te. Kore wa mou Family Fresh samatama deshite. Ato katazuke wa danzen kore. Te ni yasashii no. Daimu no kaori mo fresh nano desu.
Te ni yasashii Family Fresh.
Dead of the Chinese coronavirus at the age of 63, media personality Kumiko Oke.
We're living on time, we're having to borrow. No one knows if we will live to see tomorrow. People will say when they look back at today, those were the good old.
Asked Leslie Bricus about the good old bad old days. Oh, he said it was a simple little story about life, death, good, evil, man, God and the devil, encompassing the entirety of world history. So nothing pretentious about it in the least, said Leslie. Well, it sort of fits our time. There's all kinds of music, but not a lot of music just titled, quote, music, unquote. Nevertheless, that's the name of a song by John Miles, produced by Alan Parsons, that in 1976 they took to number 88 on America's Billboard Hot 100, number 3 in the United Kingdom, and number 1 in the Netherlands. Here it is, played by the Swedish trombonist Ollie Holmquist. As John Miles' lyric had it, music was my first love and it will be my last. The music of the future, the music of the past. And so it was for Ollie Holmquist. Completely self-taught, he started as a tuba player in the Swedish Armed Forces Band, then moved to the trombone and the Swedish Radio Big Band, and the ABBA boys, Benny and Bjorn, and Quincy Jones and Jerry Lewis, and Manhattan Transfer, and he spent 35 years with the James Last Orchestra, a Euro phenomenon that came out of Germany back when James Last was in fact Hans Last, before he was persuaded that a nice English name like James would make him far more marketable across the continent. Opinions are divided on the James Last Orchestra. It was, in essence, a big band, but with a rock rhythm section. So big band fans thought he'd sold out to the rockers, and rockers thought he hadn't sold out enough. But he had some great arrangements that gave plenty of room for his star soloists. Here's Ollie Holmquist taking a turn on something called Sweet Lucy. That's a great trombonist at his very best. Dead of the Chinese coronavirus at the age of 83, Ollie Holmquist.
Good morning, worm, your honour. The crown will plainly show the prisoner who now stands before you was caught red-handed showing feelings of an almost human nature. This will not do.
Sir John Laws was an English jurist and I believe the longest serving Lord Justice of the Court of Appeal ever. With a name like John Laws, that might seem an obvious calling, but in fact he chose his profession because he chanced to read his dad's old copy of a biography of a former Lord Chancellor.
Well, my father had a copy of the really rather poor biography of F.E. Smith, Lord Birkenhead, that had been written by Birkenhead's son. And I read it, or perhaps I only read some of it, and I don't recall, as a young teenager. And I suppose I thought that, as teenagers perhaps are inclined to, that this was a very romantic profession with a lot of contest in it. And I remember announcing to my grandfather on August the 1st of my 13th year that I was going to be a barrister. I know it was always the first because that was the day we always went up to northeast Scotland for the summer holiday.
He sounds rather genial there, and in person he was, but he was not a genial jurist. He became ever more activist, as they say, and his rulings thus became provocative and disturbing. I wrote a few years back in Maclean's about his decision upholding the sacking of a black Christian for declining to provide sex therapy lessons to gay couples. Lord Justice Laws ruled that, quote, law for the protection of a position held purely on religious grounds is irrational, divisive, capricious, arbitrary. Actually, it was the law of Justice Laws that became increasingly irrational, divisive, capricious, arbitrary. The ruling on legal protection for Christian beliefs would have been controversial either way, but to pile on the way John Laws did was most unjudicious, not to mention his rebuke to the Archbishop of Canterbury for filing an amicus brief. Just a few months ago, Sir John felt obliged to state publicly that his own nephew's boss would be heading to jail if he defied the courts. His nephew is Dominic Cummings, the senior advisor to Boris Johnson, the UK Prime Minister mired in the legal disputes over prorogation. The suits themselves, a fine example of what happens when a land of law decays into a land of laws, capital L-A-W-S, whose judges intrude on ever more aspects of life and shrink remorselessly what his predecessor Lord Moulton called the realm of manners.
The evidence before the court is incontrovertible. There's no need for the jury to retire. In all my years of judging, I have never heard before of someone more deserving than the full penalty of
Why am I playing a Pink Floyd song called The Trial? Well, because Pink Floyd sued EMI, and that case too was appealed before Lord Justice Laws, who, notwithstanding Pink Floyd's view of the judiciary in that song, upheld the band's initial victory. Dead of the Chinese coronavirus at the age of 75, Sir John Laws.
Je suis René Malady, le supporter de l'Olympique de Marseille. Ici, bien sûr, c'est pas pareil. Je suis occitan de maison, mais marseillais d'adoption. À Marseille, on défraye la chronique, pas de panique.
If you're a fan of Olympique de Marseille, you'll know that music. There have been, to me at least, a remarkable number of footballers, that's soccer players for our American listeners, a remarkable number of footballers felled by the Wu flu, star players from all over Europe, all over Africa. We could easily do several last calls entirely devoted to footballers from four continents. Pap Diouf was not a football player himself. Born in Chad to Senegalese parents, he became a French sports columnist, the first of many firsts. France's first black sports columnist, first black sports agent, and the first black president of a top-tier European sports team.
After studying at the prestigious Sciences Po University in Paris, Pap Diouf started his career as a journalist, working for a city newspaper, and later became a football agent with clients such as Basile Boli, Joseph Antoine Bell, or Didier Drogba.
Diouf led the club between 2005 and 2009 and helped build the side that lifted the French Premier League title in 2010.
There was to be one more first in a lifetime thereof. Too sick to be flown to Nice, Pap Diouf died in Dakar and became the first Senegalese victim of the Chinese coronavirus at the age of 68.
Life is bad, human misery everywhere, stormy weather. I just can't get my poor self together.
Debbie Harry, with music by Harold Arlen, lyrics by Ted Kohler, production by Hal Wilner. What Hal Wilner liked to do was all-star tributes to musicians he liked, like Harold Arlen, Charles Mingus, Kurt Weill, Leonard Cohen, quite a few of which I bought on CD without knowing he was the man behind the projects. But if that's your labour of love, it helps to have a steady income. So Wilner joined Saturday Night Live a couple of years after it got going as the youngest guy on the team, and stayed until a couple of weeks back, by which point he was pretty much the oldest guy on the team, with the near parodic, laconic drawl of weary experience. He was in charge of the music for the sketches, for which his prodigious knowledge was a great advantage. As he was always at pains to point out, he wasn't the fellow who booked the musical acts, which was a whole other skill, and at which his track record was somewhat spotty.
I never book bands here. But I was responsible for a few bookings, Miles Davis and Captain Beefheart, both of which were considered disaster appearances. Miles had his back to the camera, which was driving them nuts, and Captain Beefheart has tones that a lot of people can't handle. And when he finished, not one person in the audience clapped, and one guy from the balcony yelled, "Shit!" The Clash was another one, too, that it was this rumor going around that they spread that they're going to go on live TV and do something outrageous. And I said, you know, I heard you're going to do something. You know, if you told us what it's going to be, we can help. And they're snickering. During the show, Cosmo Vinyl came running into the studio with a ghetto blaster. And the band stopped playing. Went to press a button to play something from the ghetto blaster. But it wasn't working. It's just nothing. Could ask for help, would have been happy to help him.
And the days dwindled down to
to a precious few. September, November.
Dead of the Chinese coronavirus a day after his 64th birthday, Hal Wilner, producer of that unlikely pairing of Lou Reed with a song by Kurt Weill and Maxwell Anderson. And these few precious days I'd spend with you. But what with all the sheltering in place and the police checkpoints, I can't get within 70 miles. Stay safe, stay free.
Join us next time for another edition of The Mark Stein Show. The Mark Stein Show is a production of Mark Stein Enterprises and Oak Hill Media. Rights reserved.